Think about this for a second. How do you capture the vital but incredibly fragile ecosystem of an entire country, along with the heavy daily burden of its marginalized communities?
Right, that is quite the question.
And, you know, how do you do all of that from 5,000 kilometers away using absolutely nothing but pigmented water?
I mean, it sounds like an impossible premise. You're talking about trying to translate the profound weight of human struggle and this immense ecological scale into, well, one of the most unpredictable, delicate mediums on Earth.
It really is a staggering creative challenge, but that is the mission of today's deep dive. We are looking at a single extraordinary artwork titled Atardecer en la Ciénaga.
Which translates to Sunset in the Swamp, right?
Exactly. Sunset in the Swamp by the artist Jero Duque. He is depicting the Colombian Caribbean. And the sources we have on the table today are just fascinating.
Oh, they really are.
Because we don't just have a visual reproduction of the painting. We actually have access to something much rarer. We have the artist's highly unusual, intensely self-critical personal notes.
Yeah, having those notes is like, it's basically getting a backstage pass directly into the artist's brain while he's working.
It is. And to set the stage for you, the geographic contrasts here are just wild. He painted this piece in September of 2022 while he was in Whittier, California.
A completely different world from a Colombian swamp.
Literally. But then the following year, the painting was exhibited in Venice, Italy.
Which is so interesting. What's fascinating here is the poetic symmetry of that journey. If you think about the nature of the places involved.
Oh, how so?
Well, this is a painting whose central theme is vulnerability to water. I mean, it's about communities, these palafitos or stilt house villages, balancing their entire existence mere inches above the waterline.
Right.
And then it ends up being exhibited in Venice, an ancient city that is globally famous for sinking.
Wow, yeah.
You know, it's famous for its constant desperate battle against the tides and its own profound vulnerability to water. So the environment of the exhibition actually mirrors the precariousness of the subject matter.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because our objective today is to decode how an image that, at first glance, looks like a perfectly serene, gorgeous landscape is actually hiding a really profound reflection on ecological fragility.
And on ethics, too.
Exactly, the ethics of how we view other people's struggles. But before we dive into the heavy ethical questions, we have to address the immediate visual impact of this artwork.
We do, because it's what makes you stop and look in the first place.
Right. When you look at this piece, the visual hook is just spectacular. You are hit with this massive golden sky.
Yeah, the seduction of the viewer is immediate. Mm. And it's highly intentional.
It really is. The setting sun is literally setting the swamp water on fire with these brilliant, blinding orange and yellow reflections.
It's stunning.
It makes you feel warm just looking at it. It feels like, I don't know, paradise. It feels like a place you want to escape to.
But that's the thing. Duque is designing a very specific psychological experience for you, the viewer, because in his notes, he is explicitly clear about the reality of the region he's painting.
And just as a quick disclaimer here, so, you know, our deep dive today remains completely neutral. We are strictly analyzing the artist's stated perspective on this socio-political issue, just to understand his art.
Right, absolutely. So looking strictly through his lens, he acknowledges the immense ecological beauty of the Caribbean wetlands, but he aggressively contrasts that with its gritty reality.
A painful reality.
Yeah, he views this as a wounded place. He describes these communities as families struggling daily against what he calls institutional abandonment.
And when we say institutional abandonment in the context of these stilt villages, we aren't just talking about some abstract political buzzword.
No, not at all.
We are talking about communities hovering over a swamp where there is often no municipal plumbing, no structural support from the government.
Right, no emergency safety net when the waters rise or the fish just disappear.
Exactly. It is a harsh, precarious existence that is entirely dependent on the whims of the wetland.
Which is why that beautiful, warm light of the sunset is not there to comfort anyone. It's a deliberate tension.
The beauty is almost hiding the reality.
Yes, the glorious sky is crashing hard against the incredibly difficult reality of the stilt houses that are barely visible in the background. Duque knows that the beauty is a trap. He is luring you in with aesthetics.
I love that concept, the beauty trap. It's like, imagine you are flipping through a luxury travel magazine or just scrolling through your feed. And you see a photo of a breathtaking, pristine white sand beach, crystal clear turquoise water, perfect palm trees.
A classic vacation shot.
Right. Your brain instantly categorizes it as paradise. But then you zoom in.
Okay.
You look closer at the image and you realize that the brilliant white sand isn't sand at all. It is entirely made up of millions of crushed, bleached microplastics.
Oh, wow. That is a visceral way to describe it.
Right. The realization completely rewires how you experience the image. The beauty basically lowers your defenses. You let your guard down because you're taking in something visually pleasant.
Yeah, you're relaxed.
So when the harsh reality of the context finally clicks in your brain, it hits you twice as hard because you are already emotionally invested in the warmth of the image. You've already stepped into the trap.
That is the exact psychological mechanism driving Atar Desair en La Cienega.
Mm-hmm.
You're lured in by the golden hour, and then boom, you are confronted by the reality of the swamp.
It's brilliant.
And once you're in that trap, your eye is naturally guided downward. You take in the oppressive, massive sky dominating the upper half of the painting.
Mm-hmm.
You see the water acting as a mirror below. You notice the faint silhouettes of the stilt houses hovering in the middle distance.
But eventually, your eye lands on the true visual anchor of the piece, right there in the immediate foreground.
Exactly.
It's the silhouette of a person in a canoe, holding what looks like an oar or maybe a long pole, navigating the shallow water.
And that figure is rendered as a pure backlight, an absolute impenetrable shadow. There's no face, no clothing, no detail whatsoever.
Wait, I am really struggling with this part of his process. Let's think about this critically for a second. The figure is a complete shadow. There are zero facial features. There are no details that might indicate the poverty or the struggle we were just talking about.
Right. No ragged clothes.
Exactly. No ragged clothes, no visible signs of exhaustion in the posture. If Duke's stated goal in his own notes is to highlight social abandonment and make the viewer acknowledge these communities, why completely erase their faces?
It seems counterintuitive.
It does. Doesn't making a marginalized person a faceless shadow just make them even more invisible? I mean, if I want you to care about someone's struggle, shouldn't I show you their eyes?
It is a completely natural reaction to want to see a face. Human beings are hardwired for it. We look for eyes to connect with.
Right.
And your reaction points to the exact trap that so much documentary art and photography falls into.
Mm.
But Duke counters this in his notes by explaining a concept he calls ethical coherence.
Ethical coherence. Okay, how does he explain that?
Let's follow his logic. If he paints the deep wrinkles of exhaustion on that fisherman's face, or if he meticulously details torn, threadbare clothes, what is the immediate psychological result for the viewer?
Well, I mean, I feel a sense of pity for that specific person. I feel bad for the guy in the canoe.
Exactly. You feel bad for him. You experience what psychologists sometimes call the identifiable victim effect.
Oh, interesting.
You get a rush of cheap instant pity for one specific man. Duke calls this aestheticizing the drama.
Aestheticizing the drama.
Yeah. It turns someone else's grueling daily survival into a consumable, superficial, emotional transaction for the viewer.
Oh, wow.
You look, you feel a pang of sadness, you mentally pat yourself on the back for being an empathetic person, and then you just walk away from the painting feeling resolved.
Ah, I see the danger there. By giving the viewer all the specific details of suffering, the artist is basically letting the viewer off the hook.
Exactly. The subject just becomes an anecdote. A sad story you consumed.
But by stripping away those specific individual details and turning the figure into a stark, impenetrable shadow, the figure ceases to be a single anecdote.
Yes. The shadow doesn't erase the person's identity. It actually accumulates it.
That's a great way to put it.
That one featureless silhouette represents every single family living in the swamp. It becomes monumental. It demands respect and acknowledgement of a systemic reality rather than just offering a quick hit of pity.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because by withholding the specific, he forces you to confront the universal.
Precisely.
It's not just one person's tragedy that you can pity and forget. It is an entire community's reality staring back at you in silhouette.
And this brilliant use of shadow and light, this ethical coherence, isn't just a high-level philosophical choice.
Mm.
It is deeply, fundamentally tied to the physical behavior of the chosen medium itself.
The watercolor.
Yes. The message and the physics of the paint are completely intertwined. In his notes, Duke details exactly what he's using. He mentions Daniel Smith watercolors on a piece of Arch's 300-gram cold-pressed French paper.
And it's a relatively small piece of paper too, right? Like 15 by 11 inches.
Right, which forces the viewer to physically step closer to see this immense landscape.
Okay, break that down for us. Why do those specific materials matter so much? Why did he even bother writing that down in his notes?
It matters because of how those materials physically behave. Arch's cold-pressed paper is highly textured, it's made of cotton, and the cold-press part of the manufacturing process leaves the paper with microscopic valleys and peaks.
Okay, I can picture that.
And the 300-gram weight means the paper is thick and really thirsty. It's designed to hold a massive amount of water without buckling.
Right.
So when you use Daniel Smith watercolors, which are known for their heavy granulated pigments, on this specific paper, you aren't just brushing paint onto a flat surface.
You are creating like a miniature fluid dynamic system on the paper.
You really are. Watercolor is not a medium of absolute control like heavy oil paint where you can sculpt every single eyelash and it stays exactly where you put it.
Yeah, oil paint stays put.
With watercolor on cold-pressed paper, you have to negotiate with the water. The artist drops the pigment into the wet paper, and the water dictates how that pigment bleeds, how the edges blur.
And how those heavy pigments settle into the microscopic valleys as the water evaporates.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is how the medium literally mirrors the ecosystem he is painting.
Oh, that is so cool.
Just as the artist must surrender a certain amount of control to the water on the page, the daily survival of the people living in those stilt houses is entirely dictated by the swamp water.
The physical environment they live in is fluid, it's precarious, and it's constantly threatening to dissolve the boundaries of their lives, just like the water dissolves the boundaries of the paint.
Yeah, the physical act of painting the wetland basically becomes the wetland. The artist has to respect the water on the page, just as the communities respect the water of the swamp.
And nowhere is his mastery of this medium clearer than in what he calls the economy of resources in his notes.
Yes, the economy of resources.
Think about those blinding, golden, fiery reflections on the water in the painting. The parts that catch your eye first and lure you into the trap.
They're so vibrant.
But they aren't painted. He didn't use white paint or neon yellow paint to make them bright. Those highlights are the raw, unpainted, naked white paper shining through. He just painted the darks around them.
He preserved the blank space. He allowed the foundation to speak for itself.
It makes me think of how composers use silence in music. You know when you're listening to a massive symphony and the entire orchestra abruptly stops playing?
Yeah, that's set and drop.
There is a second of absolute dead silence in the concert hall. The composer didn't run out of notes. The composer knows that a second of absolute silence will make the next chord hit you with triple the force.
That's a perfect analogy.
That bare white paper is acting as a deafening visual silence. Mm. It creates this brutal, blinding depth without adding a single unnecessary detail.
A deafening visual silence. That captures the technical restraint perfectly. But, and this raises a really important question based on our sources. Despite this incredible synergy of medium, physics, and ethical messaging, the artist's personal notes reveal something shocking. Duke was actually deeply dissatisfied with his own work.
That part of the notes blew my mind.
Oh.
We are sitting here dissecting the genius of the shadows and the light, and in his private writings, Duke is brutally critiquing himself over this exact painting.
He is a relentlessly harsh judge of his own creation. If you look at pages 161 and 162 of his notes, he specifically targets the shadows.
The very shadows we just established as the ethical core of the painting.
Exactly. He looks at the shadow of the fishermen in those distant stilt houses, and he calls them too flat.
Too flat.
Yeah. He writes that he wishes he had added subtle grays and purples into the blackness to create what he calls visual vibration.
Visual vibration, meaning like if he had layered complementary colors like deep purples into the black shadow, the human eye would bounce around those subtle color shifts.
Right. The shadow would feel more alive. It would be more shimmering and technically complex rather than just a flat silhouette.
Mm.
He felt the uniform darkness lacked the energy it needed.
Wow.
He also mentions that the tension between the mass of the sky and the mass of the water could have been stretched further to exaggerate the feeling of immensity even more. He is literally looking at his painting and seeing a list of technical missed opportunities.
So what does this all mean? Because I have to completely challenge the artist's own regret here.
Go for it.
Wait a minute. If he had added those subtle purples and grays, if he had given those shadows more visual vibration and complex detail, Wouldn't that have completely ruined the anonymity and the visual silence that makes the piece so ethically powerful in the first place?
That's a great point.
Wouldn't drawing the viewer's eye into the complex, shimmering details of the fisherman slide him right back toward individualizing the figure, toward aestheticizing the drama?
It is a massive contradiction, and you have hit on the eternal paradox of the creative process. Artists so often see glaring technical errors where the audience sees pure conceptual magic.
That's so true.
Duke is critiquing a lack of technical flourish. You know, wishing he had showed off his mastery of color mixing with purples and grays, but he's critiquing it in the exact spot where his conceptual simplicity and moral restraint actually won the day.
It is almost like his ego wanted to show off his technical chops, but his instinct for the moral weight of the piece subconsciously stopped him. He held back, even if he regretted it later in his notes.
And that lingering dissatisfaction is deeply revealing about his relationship to his subject. It proves that the work is still alive and unresolved in Duke's mind.
Because he cares so much.
Right. It highlights the eternal tension creators face.
Mm-hmm.
The magnetic pull between seeking absolute technical perfection to prove your skill versus maintaining stark, uncompromised conceptual simplicity to honor the subject.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he is still agonizing over the flatness of a shadow means he hasn't moved on from the community he painted. He is still wrestling with his responsibility to them.
Which brings us back to the real people living in that swamp. Duke's internal conflict shows that his primary motivation was respect.
Absolutely.
He wasn't just casually painting a pretty picture of a sunset to sell in a gallery. He was trying to navigate a moral minefield. In his notes, he specifically names the real communities to anchor them in reality.
Right. He lists Meva Venecia, Buena Vista, Bocas de Arcataca.
These aren't abstract, nameless concepts to him. They are real people dealing with real, difficult geography.
But crucially, while he names them to give them visibility, he refuses to speak for them. He positions himself merely as a sensitive witness.
A silent witness.
Yeah. He explicitly states that he treats his artwork as a threshold, or a doorway, for the viewer. He builds the door with the beautiful golden sunset. He brings you to the threshold with the aesthetic trap. But it is entirely up to you to walk through that door and acknowledge the harsh human reality in the shadows on the other side.
He provides the context, but he demands that the viewer do the ethical work of acknowledging the subjects.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the relevance of this specific artistic choice to our daily lives is profound. We live in an era of endless, relentless social media doom scrolling.
Oh, don't we all know it?
We are bombarded with thousands of images every single day on our phones. Many of those images depict acute human suffering. Many depict breathtaking natural beauty. And quite often, we are fed a confusing, rapid-fire mix of both.
The algorithm just feeds it to us in an endless stream. A war zone, then a luxury vacation, then a natural disaster, then a sunset. It's exhausting.
It is. And because of that volume, learning how to read an image past its beautiful or shocking surface is incredibly vital. Looking past the aesthetic trap to find the actual human story and questioning the ethical core of how that story is presented is no longer just an exercise for art historians in a gallery. It is a mandatory critical thinking skill for anyone navigating the modern digital world.
It is the difference between passively consuming someone else's pain as entertainment and actively recognizing their humanity.
Very well said.
You know, we just spent all this time dissecting the watercolor technique, the capillary action of the cold pressed paper, the pigments and the shadows. But what if the true masterpiece of A Tardeceras La Cienega isn't the physical painting itself?
What do you mean?
What if the actual masterpiece is the artist's moral restraint?
Wow. The profound discipline required to not overexplain. The discipline to leave the shadow flat, even when every technical instinct screamed at him to add more detail.
Exactly. The restraint to let the shadow just be a shadow. It forces us to ask ourselves hard questions about the media we consume every single day. How often do today's narrators, documentary filmmakers, and digital content creators cross that ethical line?
Constantly, I'd say.
How often do they exploit another person's tragedy, painting in all those little gritty details of suffering under the guise of raising awareness, when in reality, it is just a calculated move to gain clicks, shares, and engagement?
It is a razor-thin line between being a witness to a struggle and being an exploiter of that struggle. Duke managed to stay on the right side of it by holding back.
He absolutely did. So the next time you see a stunning landscape image pop up on your feed, promising a quick, beautiful visual escape, pause for a second. Look a little closer at the shadows. Look past the pigmented water and the golden light. because those shadows represent real lives and real systemic struggles. Lives that are waiting to be recognized, but demanding never to be exploited.